Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, January 28, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemire. Here are our top stories this evening. President Robert Mugabe leaves for the African Union summit as the AU dismisses reports that some ambassadors want him to run for a second term.
He has come up with his vision to sort of kickstart our development. The vision 2063, which when followed, shall be approved later on. The claim is too small, for Africa.
Struggling Zimbabwean teachers turn to vending in a bid to supplement their meager income.
We as teachers, we are struggling at the moment. We are right now conducting extra lessons, selling vegetables at home to supplement the salary that we are having.
And the European Union is set to give Zimbabwe an additional $4.5 million for tackling a crippling drought. President Robert Mugabe left Harare this afternoon for an African Union summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, that is set for Saturday, as a top AU diplomat denied statements by a ZANU-PF legislator that African Union envoys had expressed a desire to see Mr. Mugabe getting a second term as chairman of the African Union. Mr. Mugabe will hand over the bloc's rotational chairmanship on Saturday after serving for the conventional 1 year. But after visiting the AU headquarters with a team of other Zimbabwean parliamentarians, ZANU-PF lawmaker Kindness Baradza alleged yesterday that AU ambassadors and commissioners wanted President Mugabe to be given a second term so he can continue leading the continental body. However, that information is false, according to African Union Commission Deputy Chairperson Erastus Ngwencha, who spoke exclusively to Studio 7. Mr. Ngwencha said he was hearing the narrative for the first time and flatly dismissed it as false information. As Mr. Mugabe steps aside, critics and admirers are weighing in assessing his achievements and failures at the helm of the AU. Independent political commentator Joyce Ngwenya tells Studio 7 there is absolutely nothing that Mr. Mugabe achieved as AU chair.
During President Mugabe's tenure, we have had a flare-up in Burundi. You know, the African Union force in Somalia has been under a lot of pressure with big losses in Kenya. You know, the Al-Shabaab has been causing havoc. And in northern Nigeria, the Boko Haram, there is a flaring up of violence in Mozambique with refugees going to Malawi. You know, it is almost impossible to see how President Mugabe can resolve Africa's crisis. Poverty is only increased. There is drought. There are no adaptation and mitigation processes for food security.
A ZANU-PF member of parliament who recently visited Ethiopia is alleging that he interacted with diplomats at the AU and they have a feeling that they wanted to see Mugabe having a second term. What do you make of that?
This is trying to export poisonous politics from Zimbabwe. The mentality of entitlement and overstaying in office. The OAU position is rotational. It is actually voluntary. It is a figurehead state. So I don't see why, how it's going to add any value. We are talking about a man who has been in power for 35 years. Who has not been able to change things in Zimbabwe for 35 years. How can he be able to change things in whatever role, whether it is a ceremonial or it's executive, is not going to add more value. So the mentality of Africans of overstaying and the second tenure, I think it shows the highest level of bootlicking on the part of ZANU-PF community.
That was independent political commentator Joyce Ngwenya on the line from Harare with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo. But ZANU-PF legislator Joseph Chuma says Mr. Mugabe has left an indelible legacy at the AU.
He has come up with his vision to sort of kickstart our development. The vision 2063, which when followed, shall be approved later on. The claim is too small, for Africa. Look, even in the development themselves, Obama is experiencing his second term of 45 years right now, and still haven't done much as well in those 8 years or so. which means that 1 year definitely is going to be a small time to actually bring in a real change. But the basics is that our president put in foundations that are going to be a strong ones for our future.
But Mr. Chuma, critics say that under Mr. Mugabe's leadership, the African Union has been found wanting on many fronts. Look at the refugee crisis in North Africa. Look at wars that are raging, hunger, terrorism. What's your response?
All efforts are being done to try and correct that. And I said before, it's not going to be an easy thing because we are dealing with another human mind, dealing with another crisis or another enemy looking at things. But the bottom line is that we do not just sit down. The president, we do not just sit down. People were appointed to go through and try and assist all these nations that are in trouble. All these were efforts of the AU through the chairmanship of our president.
That was ZANU-PF legislator Joseph Chuma on the line from Ulawayo with the reporter Ntungamili Nkomo. Some Zimbabwean teachers say they are struggling to make ends meet in the country currently facing serious social and economic problems. Most teachers, who can hardly survive on monthly meager earnings, have resorted to selling various wares in an attempt to supplement their income. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo reports from the Manicaland provincial capital.
Teachers are paid almost $500 per month, but some take home about $100 after salary deductions, including loans and credits with departmental stores and other entities. Realizing that this is affecting their families, some are now engaged in various activities like buying and selling goods in order to supplement their income. Edwin Mukute, who is a teacher at Chiroa Kangwe School in Dangamvura Sebabo Mutare, says owing to the hard times that have befallen them, most are conducting extra lessons for local students. He says these extra lessons are held over weekends and school holidays, where they charge varying amounts of money.
We as teachers, we are struggling at the moment. We are right now conducting extra lessons, selling vegetables at home to supplement the salary that we are having. Also, we are selling some stuff even at the school where we teach, in the class where we teach, you sell stuff like pencils and other small stuff for the children to buy so that we supplement the small income that we are having.
Another school teacher, Peter Pariani, says he has diversified into selling second-hand clothing and engaging some other income-generating projects. Pariani says there's never a time, especially around now, where a teacher would only rely on their monthly salary to survive.
Does you know that the salaries that we are getting, they are too little to sustain our families and our livelihood? We are engaging into vendor and flea market activities. Like myself, I go to Mozambique, I try to buy second-hand clothes and come and resell. I also take the opportunity when I go to school, I also sell sweets and zip next to students.
Julius Mangezi, a teacher from Chipinge Communal Lanes, says he plays hide-and-seek with school authorities since it is forbidden to sell anything at school. He, too, is now into vending at the school grounds.
What we have now devised is that we are now mostly into vending as a way of trying to supplement our meager salaries. But as you are aware, our school heads do not allow such activities. So we have to do it clandestinely as means of, augmenting our salaries.
Another teacher from Yanga, who only identified himself as Edwin, says he is now engaged in illegal activities in order to survive. He says some of his female colleagues are now engaged into prostitution in order to supplement their income. He says all this is happening due to the current economic problems bedeviling the country.
As teachers, we are struggling because our salaries are not good for us. In December, we are promised the bonus and they did not give us the bonuses. And this month, our dates have been changed for our salaries. And we have now turned into selling vegetables, clothes, just to supplement our salaries. We are also struggling to pay our fees, so we are trying by every means to do something which is illegal, some cannot name.
The plight of teachers cuts across many civil servants as they are being paid by the same employer, the government of Zimbabwe. All are crying foul over the deepening economic crisis in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Amoyo.
The European Union is giving Zimbabwe an additional $4.5 million with a view of raising more funds to ease a crippling drought caused by El Nino weather phenomenon and a crumbling economy. Reporter Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare.
EU Ambassador to Zimbabwe Philippe Van Dam told journalists in Harare today that the regional body confirmed the funding yesterday.
We will probably get another $4.5 million for Zimbabwe.
The funding is in addition to the £12 million which the EU has given to Zimbabwe and six other Southern African countries to save lives of people facing hunger. Van Dam said there was stiff competition for emergency funds and urged the Zimbabwean government to declare drought an emergency in order to enhance its chances of getting more funding amid competition from other needs.
That's why we think it may be important indeed to declare a state of humanitarian emergency, because that is a signal for the international community that indeed we have difficulties coping with this crisis.
Asked whether Zimbabwe's huge foreign debt would not hinder Zimbabwe's chances for more emergency funding, Van Dam said humanitarian funding was never linked to any considerations.
Humanitarian aid is always disconnected from any other consideration.
The announcement by the EU follows reports that the United States Agency for International Development will give an additional $5 million to Zimbabwe to ensure food security in the country. USAID and its partners, such as the United Nations World Food Programme, are this year spending more than $30 million on drought mitigation measures in Zimbabwe. Agriculture Minister Joseph Made could not be reached for comment. The Zimbabwean government is spending more than $2 million on maize imports. An estimated 1.5 million people are in need of food aid, but traditional leaders say the figure could increase as more people are running out of food. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Some hotel operators in northern Zimbabwe say business is being crippled by rampant poaching in the Zambezi Valley and surrounding areas. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa has more details.
This came out at a two-day National Tourism Master Plan seminar in Kariba Town, attended by various stakeholders who expressed concern over the depletion of wildlife in the region. One of the attendants, Shakespeare Somondo, who is in the tour guide business, told participants that there was a marked decrease in tourism arrivals last year due to wildlife poaching. Somondo said the government should intensify the fight against the poachers, as very few tourists normally visit Zimbabwe to either see or hunt animals. He said most tourists are not interested in just putting up in hotels.
Tourists are very few these days because there are no longer many animals due to poaching. Something must be done urgently to poachers. We are losing business.
Several other attendants supported his views, noting that wild animals play a critical role in promoting tourism in the country. Other issues that came out at the seminar included disparities in the pricing of tourism packages and various commodities in Zimbabwe. Businesswoman Jacqueline Paspanojga, who owns a lodge, said some tourists are even complaining about high food prices. Paspanojga said some organizations like Buy Zimbabwe campaign promoting the purchasing of local products instead of goods brought from other countries appear to be discouraging tourists from visiting Zimbabwe.
Most tourists complain about expensive. Maybe they say the prices does not commensurate with the food provided.
Sophie Karembra, Zimbabwe Tourism Association Director of Planning, Research and Development, noted that her organization will urgently look into the concerns of all stakeholders. Karembra said the government should immediately take stern measures against poachers, as the country is risking losing tourism business to nations like Namibia. She said the fall of the South African rand is worsening the situation for Zimbabwe.
In light of the fall of the rand, if you see this market was really, this destination was really for the South African market, and the rand is weaker compared to the US dollar. So the amount of money they are going to be charged to visit Kariba, obviously they can't afford. They can as well stay in South Africa.
Peter Nizet, Associate Development Consultant and a team leader of the Zimbabwe Tourism Master Plan, urged government to look into issues of licensing that was being hampered by state bureaucracy.
What we would do in the master planning process is to look at real incidences, real issues that are being felt on a day-by-day basis by local operators, by entrepreneurs, and to see exactly what they are talking about when they talk about hurdles.
The master plan is designed to guide Zimbabwe's tourism sector and hopefully catapult it into the envisaged $5 billion industry within the next few years. Reporting for Studio 7 in Kariba, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, a closer look at Zimbabwe Equatorial Guinea relations. Stay tuned. But first, a look at regional and international news. The Netherlands, which holds the European Union presidency, is working on a plan for a core group of member states to accept migrants and refugees from Turkey if migrants who already arrived are sent back to Greece, a Dutch politician said today. The World Health Organization warns the Zika virus, seen as a possible cause of severe birth defects, is spreading rapidly through the Americas and could affect as many as 4 million people. WHO says the mosquito-borne virus was originally seen as a mild risk to humans, but it has since grown rapidly to a public health threat of alarming proportions. As the popularity of wearable fitness trackers continues to grow, researchers are developing a sensor that can glean health information from perspiration. And former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo entered a not guilty plea today in the opening day of his trial at the International Criminal Court. Gbagbo, the first former head of state to be tried at The Hague, is facing charges of crimes against humanity, including rape and murder, for his involvement in a protracted post-election battle in 2010 and 2011 that left 3,000 people dead. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Equatorial Guinea President Theodore Obiang Nguema Mbasogo was recently in Harare for a three-day visit, cementing his decade-long relationship with President Robert Mugabe. In remarks after closed-door meetings, Mr. Mbasogo hailed President Mugabe as a man of sound knowledge. The Zimbabwean leader seems to be increasingly relying on the Equatorial Guinea president for financial bailouts that are not always in the public domain, but have been filtering in the media of late. But where did this great friendship begin and how has it benefited the two countries? VOA's Blessing Zulu has more in this first edition of a two-part report on the Zimbabwe-Equatorial Guinea relations.
Ties between Harare and Malabo were strengthened in 2004 when Zimbabwe foiled an attempted coup known as the Wonga coup attempt by mercenaries who wanted to topple President Nguema and replace him with exiled opposition leader Severo Moto. The Spanish-based Moto is the most recognizable opposition leader in Equatorial Guinea. He has established a government in exile in Spain. In March 2004, Zimbabwe intelligence officers at Harare International Airport impounded a plane which had flown in from South Africa carrying the alleged coup leaders led by former British Special Air Service officer Simon Mann. The marketing manager of the Zimbabwe defense industry and state witness, Hope Mutize, said in court that Mann had paid him a deposit for weapons worth 180,000 in February 2004. Since 2006, Mr. Nguema remembered that gesture of goodwill and has visited Harare almost every year, and last year alone, Mr. Mugabe went to Equatorial Guinea twice. Military expert Dr. Lieutenant Colonel retired Martin Rupia argues that Mr. Mugabe and Mr. Nguema were drawn even closer after the foiled coup attempt.
I think from that moment where an African country supported another African country, the relationship then grew. And I think it has increased in strength, but it is interesting to note that the president of Guinea, Nguema, was in fact waiting for the president to return from his holiday period, already in the country, to discuss a number of issues from what we have picked up, including the reform of the United Nations Security Council and other issues, as well as other issues that relate to the Zimbabwean president handing over the AU chairmanship. So this is the context in which you see the relationship taking place.
In January 2012, President Nguema himself admitted that relations between the two nations have become strong as a result of that foiled coup attempt. Executive Director of the Washington-based Equatorial Guinea Justice, Tutu Alicante, says Mr. Mugabe and President Nguema have more things in common than the foiled coup: their alleged love for power.
It's a disquieting relationship, right? It's one that most Africans, not just people from Equatorial Guinea and Zimbabwe, but Africans in general should be concerned about, right? We are talking about two of the most undemocratic rulers in Africa today. Two people who, amongst the two of them, have been in power for over 71 years. At a time where Africa is bursting with youth.
It is this alleged trait in some African leaders that U.S. President Barack Obama bluntly criticized when he addressed the African Union summit last year, urging leaders to have term limits.
And sometimes you'll hear a leader say, well, I'm the only person who can hold this nation together. If that's true, then that leader has failed to truly build their nation. You look at Nelson Mandela. Madiba, like George Washington, forged a lasting legacy, not only because of what they did in office, but because they were willing to leave office and transfer power peacefully. And just as the African Union has condemned coups and illegitimate transfers of power, the AU's authority and strong voice can also help the people of Africa ensure that their leaders abide by term limits and their constitutions. Nobody should be president for life.
Opposition MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu says Mr. Mugabe and President Nguema's dealings are shadowy.
President Obiang has bailed out President Mugabe with money, both on a personal level and on a national level. So, look, that visit was a very dubious visit, shrouded in secrecy. Both men are dictators, and both men are known to rig elections. It's a relationship that makes us very worried as the MDC.
Harare insiders believe that Mr. Nguema also bailed out the Zimbabwe government between 2006 and 2007 when the country was being ravaged by hyperinflation by providing a fuel importation facility worth $220 million. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Blessing. Don't miss part two of this report tomorrow here on Studio 7. The People's Democratic Party says a grand coalition of like-minded political party leaders and electoral reforms are key in the democratization of Zimbabwe. Party leader Tendai Biti told journalists in Harare today that this could be the only way of beating President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party in the 2018 general elections. In a related development, firebrand opposition figure and former leader of Zimbabwe Union of Democrats, Margaret Dongo, says she suspects foul play in the gutting of a Ridgeview house in Harare early this month. Dongo claims that the house was bombed using a homemade device by unknown assailants. Police and the Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority have assessed the incident, with ZESA saying it was not connected to an electric fault. Studio 7 failed to reach the police for a comment. Dongo speaks to Studio 7 about this issue.
I suspect there was an arson of some kind, because the way it happened, there is something which blasted in one of my son's bedroom, which was just opposite to my bedroom. We just had this heavy blast And by the time we woke up, there was fire everywhere. And it was toxic smelling. You couldn't even tell, okay, what is smelling in this building? There was no chemicals, there was nothing, but it was smelling. And the fire was so heavy. And the lucky part of it, that it didn't spread so fast, is that, you know, it was fireproof. There was asbestos ceiling. Now, what happened is the areas which were covered by pine cones, that's where the fire was trying to penetrate into the ceiling.
You suspect this to be arson. Who do you suspect?
I mean, I suspect the same people who have been following me up since 1995 when I did the first petrol bomb and the second, and also in the, and I think those people have not rested. They still feel probably that they should get rid of me. For what reasons? That much I don't understand.
What are the police saying with regards to their investigations? How far have they gone?
They said nothing. And they say, they only said the Zesa is coming, the Zesa came, and I also agree with the Zesa because there was no sign of any electrical fault.
That was opposition politician Margaret Dongo in Harare. In our sports segment, former Highlanders captain and Warriors keeper Tulani Ngube says coaching young Americans how to kick the soccer ball is an interesting task. Ngube, who was affectionately known as Beer during his heydays, says American children fuse education with soccer in a learning environment that promotes the two fields. He speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about this and how Zimbabwe can improve its soccer standards.
I work with schools and junior teams, academies, and something like that. There's a club called MC United, so I'm the director of coaching on the boys' side.
Mm. So do you do any kind of coaching back home, let's say, maybe a club or something like that?
Yeah, back home, we just me and some of my friends, we just started an academy in Luveve, so that's what we're trying to do, developing those kids and try to make their life better, maybe get some of those kids' scholarships coming here to the U.S. Because sometimes they get scholarships, but the problem in Zimbabwe, those kids, most of them, their education, they don't take it serious. So because if I'm getting a kid from Zimbabwe, they have to be academic-wise good. Because, you know, here it's different than in Zimbabwe. In here, even if you're at school, you're not going to be allowed to play if your academics are low. So you, at least you have to keep up.
So do you have any message to Zimbabweans about sport, you know, especially soccer?
Yeah, the only thing those kids, they should know is sometimes playing soccer is not about going pro. It's about getting those scholarships, and even if you don't make it pro, you still have that education, you still get a good job, and you know how it is.
And how to get pro, you know?
Yeah, most of the time, you know, pro is just lucky. You can look in Zimbabwe, how many good players we had in the past, they didn't even make it to Europe. Soccer is just being lucky, being there at the right time, seen by the right people, and having a good connection. That's the only way. We have a lot of good players in Zimbabwe, but if you're not that lucky, you're not going to make it in Europe.
Uh-huh. And finally, what can you say about the standard of soccer in Zimbabwe these days?
I think in the past 10 years or so, I haven't watched. Maybe I've only watched one or two games, but I haven't watched a lot. Because when I go to Zim, most of the time, I don't have time to go to the game. That's why we're trying to develop those kids. Because, you know, most countries like Europe, look at Germany. Germany, all the national team they have right now, they started young. All of them played for the under-17, under-20s. They grew up together. If in Zimbabwe we can do that, I think maybe one day we can qualify for the World Cup.
What will it take to do that kind of thing, Captain Beer?
Just developing kids, starting from under 15, everybody working together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only way we can do it. Like what Alois Punjira is doing in Zimbabwe, I think that's a good thing. Like his academy is doing a good thing, trying to develop those kids, giving those kids a better life.
That was Captain Tulani Wia Ngube, former Highlanders captain and Warriors player, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Thank you so much for listening. Now stand by for Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri.